This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 27th of January 2016 on Monocle 24.
Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Today I'm joined by Dominic Maxwell, theatre critic for The Times, for a look at the week in British theatre. Up for discussion, we have Alastair McGowan, starring as a coma patient trying to piece together the last 10 years of his life in 4,000 days. We'll head to the Lyric Hammersmith Theatre for a reprise of the gritty 2001 play Herons, and we'll end up in Manchester for an all-singing, all-dancing adaptation of the British film Calendar Girls. That is all to come on the Monocle Arts Review, so do stick around. Let's begin, Dominic, in North London at the Park Theatre for 4,000 Days. This is a play about a man named Michael who wakes up from a three-week coma with no recollection of his partner of the preceding 10 years, Paul. Enter Michael's meddling mother, who tries to interfere with their relationship. It stars comedian Alastair McGowan as Michael. Dominic, that's an interesting piece of casting, I guess. We've seen McGowan do a couple of, you know, straight roles, as it were, recently. Mm. Is this a comedy? I mean, memory and themes around acceptance, they're pretty hard-hitting issues, I guess.
Yes, it's really not a comedy, but it's sort of... Well, there's good news and there's bad news. Let's put it this way. I think the good news is mostly McGowan. McGowan, who is, as we know, a terrific impressionist. And if you've ever heard him talk about his craft, it's fascinating because he doesn't do a voice lightly. In order to do someone's voice, he has to really get into their head. And this skill has really seen him well as an actor. I mean, he was doing Jimmy Savile at this theatre last year, which is an extraordinary performance, but okay, still an impression. This time he's just acting. And he's great. He's by some distance the best thing in this. Whenever he's on stage, you just sense that this is a man with some sort of life off stage. Mm. He's round, you think, oh, I know him. Yeah. Play itself, not sure it's worth the bother, though.
Okay, so that's a bit of a mixed message. What about the skill then, and perhaps that answer suggests this already, the skill with which, you know, things about, you know, lost memories are portrayed on stage? Because it's quite difficult to unpick some of these kinds of issues.
Yeah, it really is. The frustration with this play is he's come up, the playwright Peter Quilter, who's best known for doing a Judy Garland bioplay Over the Rainbow, he's got a nice idea. The mother is awful. But it's her suggestion. I mean, an awful character, not an awful performance by Maggie Ollerenshaw. But it's her suggestion, which at first we think, oh no, it can't be, which is that, well, he's been in this coma for 11 years. He can't remember his boyfriend. But do you know what? Maybe his boyfriend hasn't been doing him any good. Maybe his boyfriend is why he's given up painting. Maybe this is a chance for him to start again. You know, maybe out of crisis comes opportunity. Okay, yeah, that's interesting. But this is one of those plays where people talk, and they talk and they talk and they talk. And the last time I was on, we talked about how theatre doesn't always excel at plot. Mm. And I think this
kind of a problem it can be.
Yeah, and I think this needs more plot. There's three of them. There's the boyfriend, there's the mother, there's Michael, standing around talking, and not enough happens. And so it's very difficult for them to get these issues discussed. Mm. Without it feeling exactly like that, without it feeling like issues being discussed. And they talk about, you know how people in real life never talk about exactly how they feel? Well, this is one of those plays where characters talk exactly how they feel.
And it's a shame because I guess there's a bit of a, if not an open goal, what one would imagine would be some easier hits. You can talk about his rediscovering his love for art after kind of sort of emerging from this coma. And you'd imagine actually that would be a really interesting sort of nuanced thing to explore, but he doesn't really scratch the surface.
I just think he hasn't. He's found the characters, he's found the premise, he's found the story in a way, but he hasn't found the plot. He hasn't found the way to extract all this from them. And without that, there is just a lot of people sitting around being outspoken to each other. And I, you know, it's not without the odd pleasure. But it was two hours that felt it and then some.
I just wonder, maybe not talking specifically about this show, but why do you think that happens, Dominic? Because, you know, there's obviously, you know, the playwright's craft, then you've got all the stagecraft as well. When you get something where it just doesn't quite all tick together, Where does the sort of culpability? Because you want to imagine as a producer would sort of say, I don't know. Obviously, theatre is maybe slightly different from movies in the sense you can't just reshoot a scene here or there. But why does that happen, do you think?
Well, I think when you read a play, you can respond well. It's easier to respond to dialogue than plot because you don't quite know. You know, so there's some nice dialogue in here. Like, it's a bit on the nose, actually. But I think it's one of those things that only when you get it up on the stage do you actually see, okay, everyone's just standing around talking. I mean, I once wrote a farce with a friend in my early 20s. We thought it was cracking. We thought it was hilarious. It was about David Bowie turning up at an art centre. Anyway, we thought it was great. We got some actors together to read it. And only when we got some actors together did we realise that everyone was standing around most of the time rather than rushing off and rushing here and there as they had to do. So, look, I'm not saying they didn't do a read-through or something, but I think some more rigorous process before this got to the stage was needed because I don't think it's ready for the stage yet. I think it needs at least another draft.
Intriguing. Well, it's 4,000 Days. It's on at the Park Theatre in Finsbury Park until the 13th of February. Let's head to the Lyric Hammersmith now for Herons, a revival of Simon Stevens' avant-garde 2001 play that looks at adolescent violence through the experience of the main character, 14-year-old Billy, who's the victim of local bullies. Dominic, I guess we'll talk about the production in a moment. It's interesting, this play debuted at a time when there were lots of cases about young teenagers, the pressure they were under, bullying, violence amongst those kind of communities. Sadly, it's sort of a similar refrain these days. Is it kind of an interesting time for a revival and to look back at what's changed or perhaps not changed in the intervening years?
I think not changed. I think you're absolutely right. You know, it's in a city, but it's specifically in a city, it's specifically contemporary, but actually it's Lord of the Flies, really. I don't think enough has changed probably since 2001 for this, unfortunately, to feel dated in the slightest, and the production, as we'll come into in a moment, is stylized enough that it doesn't root it too much in a particular, you know, 2001 or 2015.
And do you think that the play benefits from that? I mean, does it sort of have a moral message, if you like, that's running through it? Is that problematic, or do you think it just poses some questions in quite a kind of candid and sometimes fairly confrontational way?
Yeah, it's one of those plays. It's difficult. I'm a big fan of Simon Stevens, and particularly this sort of early run of stuff. I mean, he's best known for having adapted Curious Incidents of the Dog in the Nighttime for the National, but he did a whole batch of plays very sort of fast on each other's heels at the beginning of the century, of which this is one. And they all have these sort of often young protagonists, sort of street level. Often there's a dead child lurking on or off stage. And he really had something. But what he doesn't just do, and if it was just grim squared, that would only take you so far. I think what's lovely about his stuff is that you can't necessarily put your finger on what it is, because it does feel very hopeless. But actually, there's always a note of hope. There's always a note of love or friendship or something else running through it.
And how does the production kind of contribute towards that? Presumably it relies heavily, again, on some pretty strong central performances.
Yeah, though the production is terrific. And this is one of those things where I completely changed my mind on this production as it went along. Well, first thing to say I never changed my mind on is the young performers, most of whom are in their teens, are terrific. And what's more, the 14 and 15-year-olds, whether or not they are 14 or 15, some of them are, feel like 14 or 15. They don't feel like just out of drama school 22, having shaved very well just before they go on. They're great. But also, this is performed in a few inches of water. The whole stage is flooded with water. You never told quite why. No one acknowledges the fact. They just go splashing around in water. There's a dam upstage, which you think, yeah, that's going to burst at some stage, isn't it? And it does, but it's brilliant when it does. And at first, I just sat there thinking, ooh, their feet must be cold. Oh, dear. And then whenever they move, they go splash, 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 and it's just distracting. And you sort of start thinking of the logistics. Is it warm? Are they going to get cold? What do they do when they get off stage? Are there towels? Anyway, you have to get over that. I got over that. And once you do, it adds a kind of, I think what it adds is a sense of these characters being marooned, being separated, being adrift.
And I mean, I guess some people will look at that and say, well, hang on, that can be a little heavy-handed. Yeah. It can distract from, you know, what ultimately are subjects that need to be tackled in a very nuanced and sensitive way.
Yeah.
was it just the magnetism of the leads, but also the strong writing that enabled you to kind of transition out of early skepticism, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, the play comes into focus maybe 20, 30 minutes in, and you realise what's at stake and how high the stakes are, and you realise who's being bullied, and it's quite elliptical to begin with. And so, perhaps not coincidentally, at that point is when I stopped worrying about the water and started enjoying the water. And they also wear these strange, sort of almost Edwardian school uniforms. They have sort of cream shorts and cream knee-length socks. And it's so sort of, it's realism, not quite realism. And it does what you want this kind of theatre to do, which it creates its own world just at an angle to the real world. And I would say, which helps you see the real world a bit more clearly.
Absolutely. Well, you can do exactly that by seeing Herons, which is on at the Lyric Hammersmith until the 13th of February. Let's change pace and tone a little, Dominic, shall we, to finish at the Lowry in Salford for The Girls, a musical adaptation of the 2003 British comedy Calendar Girls, about a group of Yorkshire women who bear all famously for a charity calendar. Now, Dominic, when I first sort of read about this, I was like, well, hold on a minute. We've had the stage version of Calendar Girls. What are we dealing with here? It's obviously a sort of a new production. Is it a new name, a new rendition? There's obviously a musical element. How does this sort of fit into the Calendar Girls lineage?
Your reaction was exactly mine, because I'd seen the play a couple of times, actually, and I liked the film. And the play was one of those plays that, well, it was fine, but it's just like the film, and you can, you know, rent the film for £3 or see it on telly or whatever, so why bother going to the play? Well, my wisdom is such that the play went on to earn £35 million at the box office, making it one of the most successful shows of the century. So there you go.
But between that and your Bowie farce, yeah, you're not painting your theatrical impresario in a
That's
very
right. good light. But what this show does is it brings in songs by Gary Barlow, who grew up in the same village as Tim Firth, who co-wrote the original screenplay.
Yeah, apparently they're old pals.
Yes, I mean, I think Firth's a bit older, but yes, they became friends. And, you know, Gary Barlow can write a good anthem, but you think, well, is he going to be the man for the job? But it's terrific. What it does, the music gets you into the state, gets you into a specifically theatrical state of mind. Mm. It softens you up, basically, and it makes you susceptible to things in a way that just straight drama can't do. The music's very nice. It's very interesting. It's not they're not big anthems, and when he does try to do a big anthem, they're probably one of the less interesting parts of the show. But it's, and I think you could say this of a lot of musical tunes, and I think I'd almost include Billy Elliot in this. It's good enough, you know. It's good enough to keep the thing motoring along.
Now, it's obviously had a pretty big budget. That's been kind of noted by a number of critics, sort of north of £3 million. Do you sort of see the production value on stage, or do you just kind of imagine it being Gary Barlow's fee for the production?
No, it looks proper spenny. It looks the stuff. There's a lovely set by Robert Jones, who did the set for the last play as well, but he's done something completely different. He's used, it won't sound too interesting to describe it, but he's used lots of green cupboards, very green domestic things, to make this sort of backdrop of Yorkshire Hills. And again, it's just the right kind of scale. It's sort of approachable but spectacular, which really fits this sort of slight, you know, as with the film, as with the play, just slightly larger than life, delivery, but which has these very, very recognisable and occasionally very raw feelings in it.
And Dominic, what about the kind of the fundamentals of the plot? Obviously, I imagine the nuts and bolts are broadly similar. Any other little sort of meanders? I guess you need to sort of look to a bit of added value, or does it stay pretty true to the original?
Well, it stays pretty true. In a way, what it does is it does less storytelling and it does more emotions. And that works. It gives the characters, by giving them songs, it gives them space to let us into their lives. And I'm sorry, that sounds a bit hokey. But, for example, Joanna Riding, who plays the character whose husband gets leukemia, she has all sorts of songs, plaintive songs, with some lovely wordplay. I don't know whether it's Barlow or Firth or a combination of the two. And those really work. Those really make you think. All those things that sound hokey say, so, oh, isn't life precious? Things like that. Well, this show gets you in a position to appreciate things like that. It works.
And that, I would say, Dominic, is no bad thing.
Now, what I would quickly say is it's not quite ready. It had a run at Leeds before Christmas. It's having this run at the Lowry in Salford. It needs a bit of tweaking. It needs a bit of condensing. It's 2.5 hours. The choreographer, I think, hadn't quite got stuck in when I saw it. Sometimes it's a big old stage at the Larry and it looks it. Mm. So it's, I would say, 75% there, maybe 80% there.
But rough around the edges. But what, another hit on demand?
I think so. I
think
it's very likely, yeah.
Wonderful stuff. That's The Girls on at the Lowry in Salford, Manchester until the end of January, and likely to be probably everywhere soon after that. That brings us to the end of today's programme. Dominic Maxwell, thanks very much for being with us as always. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. The show was produced by Holly Fisher. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow to talk books. But for now, goodbye from me and thanks for listening.